You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Marino has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Marino take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
What it is, what's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host, Rafe Hewson, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, a three-time guest. That's right, we first spoke back in 2021. Can you believe that? Jesus Christ, and it's now
so long.
It's now September 2024, and so I think this guest's first episode was 65, and then his second was 110. His next will be 157, if you can believe that. And when you break down that time, you can tell I've been slacking over this last year, but it is the one and only, the Wizard King. Are we still the Wizard King? We are. It's Oren Vyte. How are we doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Fantastic. I'm pumped to be back on for a third time. We were in desperate need of a catch up.
Absolutely. Well and truly overdue.
Too long.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're trying to do that thing yearly and then it blows out 2 years. I think, what did you say? What age were you when we first spoke?
I was 27 the last time we spoke.
Oh, the last one was, wow. Okay, yeah. So, which makes it sound like 3 years.
Right, makes it seem far more intense, but I think it was right before my 28th birthday is when we talked last.
Jesus. Yeah. Time absolutely flies. Well, you're looking great. You're looking healthy. Despite the rumors of your death have been greatly exaggerated, you're still alive and kicking and still good. So give everybody – so we will speak about this a little bit, but I think we touch on the elephant in the room and then we kind of go from there because everything is a little bit up in the air, but all – internet scoopers thought they had the lowdown and stuff on your status. I've just watched ICW Milwaukee's Insane Eight, and I've seen your performance. Oh, that's my phone destroying my computer. I've seen your performance throughout the entire tournament, and I heard the words you said afterwards. But for those who didn't know, during the second round, Oren hurt his knee quite badly. And you believed you'd torn your ACL in that moment. I think you even say literally into the camera or right next to it. I'm pretty sure I fucking tore my ACL. Anyway, he finishes the tournament and wins the tournament and then has some things to say for the crowd. Internet scoop masters picked it up like, Oren Vyte wins tournament and retires or whatever. But that's not exactly the words you said. So I'll let you say it kind of in your own words now and just sort of give everybody an update on your status and then we'll cruise into it. Just what is a big catch up between two bros, really?
In the second round, first thing that happens in the second round, get speared in the corner. Mm-hmm. I feel my knee pop and I feel that feeling that, you know, I felt with torn ligaments before and everything, but just never in my knee. And I knew the second it happened that something was wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought, with everything I just felt, I just blew out my ACL. And if I blew out my ACL, like, that's going to mean surgery. That's going to mean, you know, all this recovery. And I've got a real life. I've got so many things going on that if that's what happened, I can't keep doing this anymore.
Absolutely. But it's not a small surgery. It's a very big thing. No. It would put you out for a long period of time. And like you say, you've got a real life going on as well. And maybe that's the sign from above that, you know, the clock is kind of up. You know?
Which was exactly it. And, you know, like I say in that speech at the end was, you know, if I ever was going to retire, or if I ever was going to do it, it would be in that tournament, in that moment, like that would be the time to do it. It would be for that company. It would be for those fans. But mm-hmm. It was more of a like, hey, we got to see what this is. Yeah. I got to get back. I got to get an MRI. Turns out wasn't my ACL. Was just my LCL and nothing else, which the doctor's exact words were, this never happens. The only other person he compared it to was NFL quarterback Tony Romo, who had that, and he said it was about a 6 to 8 week recovery for him.
Wow.
And that seemed pretty promising, but in about 2 weeks from the time that we're recording this, I'll go back in, I'll find out if I actually need surgery or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything's still up in the air. Mm-hmm. If I need surgery and it's a significant amount of time, then yeah, I'll be done. And,
yeah.
And that'll be it. I'll still do commentary. I'll be around, mm-hmm. You know, I think that's my big thing is I won't stop teaching, you know, students out here at Rocky Mountain Pro.
Mm-hmm.
I won't stop finding a way to be around wrestling one way or another, because mm-hmm. like I've said on our conversations before, I got into this wanting to be a commentator.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it, you know, so.
Didn't know you'd become a deathmatch wrestler at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Turns out things kind of worked a little bit differently. But, yeah, things are still all play it by ear right now. My leg feels good. Mm-hmm. I can still operate and live my life. Mm-hmm. So unless they say, hey, it's not healing.
Yeah.
We need to do surgery. Mm-hmm. We'll be all systems go once it heals.
Well, absolutely. Like, and you were saying off mic that you've been in a brace, you've been able to train, you've been able to, you know, do things and train students and even wrestle, like, you know, obviously within reason. So I think if you're smart with it and, you know, the way things work, hopefully you're not going to have to go down that road. As somebody that just had a surgery, not a huge one, but I just had to have surgery. You probably don't even know this story.
No.
Like, it definitely slows you down for quite a while. But, yeah, I just broke my wrist, like, off 5 months ago to the day, basically. Like, fucking, they've heard it on the podcast, but I slipped in a shower and landed on the ledge and snapped both bones. So I was, like, full T-Rex on this left hand.
Oh, no.
Dude, it was fucked. Then I was in Melbourne, so I had to fly back to Perth. I finished my holiday and went on a wine tour and stuff, did a hike, whatever, in the cast. flew back, had to wait 2 weeks, so just like loosey goose arm kind of thing to get in. But now I have a, big metal plate in there and they've reattached it. And, yeah, I'm at 5 months and this bad boy working, you know, there is some limitation and stuff like that. But they can do a lot with medical science. Like back in the olden times, I just would have lopped it off. Or just like I just would have been like one of those crippled guys that like wanders around with a hood and warns people about bad things and side quests. But instead, like here I am, like working. I'm actually fucking playing bass again because we have a reunion show in like a week and a half or something that for my band. And I've like been rehabbing it while relearning songs that I hadn't played in like 7 years.
I'm sure that's decent rehab.
Exactly. But not to make it about me. The point is that you can overcome a lot. You know what I mean? So even if you do have to have some kind of procedure, maybe afterwards you don't feel that bad, you know? So I guess we're just going to have to see how it plays out.
And a lot of it too is I just don't want to be Rey Mysterio who's on, you know, knee surgery number 9.
Yeah, sure. Know,
because once they start and they just keep going, and I just don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, by the time I'm 40 has, you know, 2 bionic knees that just hurt all the time.
Yeah.
Because
just constantly
blow one out. Then
Yeah. And then you're just in that cycle of like constant surgeries for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Until you're too old to even have it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they go, oh, you're too old. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just gonna let life heal that.
Absolutely. Exactly. Otherwise you're dying on this table. I do want to say that I thought your performance in the tournament, despite getting injured was quite valiant. Like, I thought that you really tried to push through, which is always kind of impressive. You know what I mean? It is the kind of thing where nobody would, you know, blame you for bowing out or whatever, but you saw it through and did your absolute best. Sometimes to some insane choices, I thought, like where you're like, you're putting the guy on your shoulders for an assault driver after you've blown your ACL, you fucking madman. But you're in the moment, you're just trying to think it through. So I thought that was really good. When you and at the end, I know you were saying, look, I was, you know, doing my best to get through it, and it's tough and things like that. When you're in those moments and something like that happens in a match, how much of it, like, how much can you sort of feel comfortable with rolling with the punches a little bit? Like, do you start to go, well, it's very obvious I'm injured, this now becomes the story of this match? You know what I mean? Like, how much of that can you pull in? And is that more challenging in, like, a deathmatch scenario than, like, a standard wrestling scenario? Because, like, I guess in deathmatch, especially when you're like, great, now I've got to walk into the final of a deathmatch tournament surrounded by all these weapons, people aren't really going to want to see my opponent putting me in a leg lock, you know, to work on my injured knee, which is, you know, maybe the way you'd go in a standard match. You know what I mean?
That is exactly the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not like, we tried to incorporate it in, but there's just so much plunder and shit everywhere. And
people want to see shit explode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're playing off what the crowd wants to see and less of like a story that you could tell, because while they might bite for that story because they obviously see it's injured,
yeah,
they obviously saw what happened, but they just at the same time want to be entertained with shit exploding. So
yeah,
we tried a couple different things to make it the focal point, but they were just thrilled that shit was exploding at the same rate as it was. And
absolutely,
the whole time I'm just taking that classic Ric Flair side bump so I don't have to land on my land on my leg or land on any of that, and just working around it. And they didn't seem to be too upset.
No. And they knew as well. You know what I mean? Like, you could hear people in the crowd, but like, you can get through it and blah, blah, blah. And I think there's a certain amount of like just respect that comes with going, look, he's just getting through it. He's out here. He knows we've paid our money and he's doing his best despite being in a bad way. And I think there is a, especially in something like deathmatch where the communities are so strong and things like that, there's a lot of goodwill that comes from something like that as well.
And I think, especially with the ICW Milwaukee fans, I mean, they've seen me do a million deathmatches. They've seen me.
Seen you win that tournament three times.
Yeah. Yeah. They've seen me push through a lot of stuff. So I think that they know that, you know, I'm giving them literally as much as I could possibly give them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not going to be upset one way or another. Mm-hmm. I think we could have given them a shitty 5-minute final, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of cases is what happens there.
Mm-hmm.
But we did everything we could to give them a long final that they waited all day for, that, mm-hmm. you know, somewhat lived up to the hype, mm-hmm. and gave them something that they could be, you know, happy with going.
Absolutely.
On.
Yeah, you didn't even like, there's always the option, you know, in wrestling to like lead into like, and now there's a run in and like all these things to like buy you time and stuff like that. But you guys we're just going to grit our teeth and we're just going to push through this.
And afterwards, I didn't even realize how long we had went.
Yeah.
Like I thought we went maybe 15, but it's like a 25-minute main.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay.
And you went through it, like all the plunder was happening, things like that. Big respect to, like, well, all of your opponents in the tournament, I think, did a great job. I mean, your first, I've got the list up. I want to get the guys' names great, right, because they did a great job, like, respectively. So your first opponent was GQ Giannos.
Yep.
Who took an insane finish, which was like an assault driver from like the second rope through tables and barbed wire and pain and shit, which is crazy. Then it was, what was that gentleman's name?
I think it's just Bobby V.
Bobby V was the last guy, right? Wasn't it?
Bobby V was 2. Tommy Trainwreck was 3.
Sure. Okay. So Bobby V, him coming out to Peacock was really funny. I was like, who's this fucking guy? And then by the end, I actually really quite liked him. I was like, yeah, he's great.
I've never wrestled Bob. Yeah. Bob's wrestled for, I want to say 20 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And like, again, another recent deathmatch guy.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, he's done them in the past, but you know, never anything too crazy.
Yeah.
But I've been on shows with Bob for the last ever, but we've never even remotely touched.
Oh, really? You guys had great chemistry too. There was like a lot of shit talk between you back and forth and stuff like that, like good banter and things like that.
We've always been that way. And Bobby and I would not call us close, but we've always like given each other shit constantly.
Yeah, right.
Just in the locker
room. So you just did it in the match.
Yeah. So it was just the same thing. And, you know, props to him for trusting me on that bump.
I was going to say the end, like, so you blew your knee in that match. And the finish of that is Bob climbs up to the top of the scaffold and you go, you fucked up now. And then in true heel fashion, it's like, oh no, maybe I have fucked up. And then you heave your fucking one-legged body up onto the top, which looked like it hurt you a lot. Bobby's like begging off and stuff. Very funny. But then he trusted you to put him on your shoulder and then essentially, well, not Death Valley driver, but, you know, shoulder, over the shoulder cradle, throw him, flip him off through like a huge structure, like putting him on your shoulders. Like that was really, really kind of scary for me because I was like, if your knee buckles, you're both gone here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Like, it was a hectic thing to do. Were you stressing? Were you thinking, I can't do this? Or you knew you had the strength?
I was like, there's no good audible out of this.
Yeah.
And we're like, I knew. Thankfully, Bobby's
not. I mean, you couldn't you just tossed him? Like,
I sure could have, but that doesn't look nearly as cool. And then I feel like Hercules afterwards.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, you did hit a great pose afterwards. You threw him off and then you just like the single finger into the air, like
I was epic. Feeling it. Yeah. I was feeling it in that moment. I was just like, yep, goddamn right, I did it.
I like how the referee just called it. They're like, he's done because there's no way you're coming down to get that pin with that knee. Like,
that's it. That's the end of the match.
Yeah, yeah.
And props to him, like, And he told me afterwards too. He's like, you have a reputation of being safe, and he's like, your reputation preceded you. Like, that was the easiest bump I could have possibly taken from that height. Like,
wow,
you put me so perfectly. Like, I didn't land awkward at all. I landed exactly the way you said I was going to land. Everything. He's like, dude, that was such an easy bump to take, all things considered.
Yeah, wow. Because it looked, and I was like, that's crazy. Like,
He went through three panes of glass and two doors.
Yeah, fucking hell. Let me ask you about that injury, like, and what it feels like, because I've never blown a knee or whatever. So when you're standing there, like, what is the pain like? And I want to try and imagine, like, standing regularly versus having a man on your shoulders. Is it more a pain that happens like when it's moving, or were you feeling like it could buckle? Like, what's the kind of vibe?
The freaky part and the reason that made me think that like I might have blown out my ACL is because I've had people that have told me when they tore their ACL that like it didn't hurt. It hurt when it happened, but it was just weak. There was no pain in it. It was just like, it felt unstable and weak, and that's exactly what I was feeling.
Sure.
Like, I had to walk. I had to take straight steps. I couldn't step to the side. I couldn't, like, if I shifted my weight at all, like, side to side instead of front to back, my knee would have just gave right out because that tear in the ligament on the outside of my knee, I just had no strength.
Yeah. So in that moment when you're up there and you've got him on your shoulders, are you essentially planting yourself on your back leg, just sort of wedging in that front leg and then sort of tipping over it kind of thing? Jesus Christ.
Because I'm like, if I try to stagger any other way or do anything different or like shift my weight, that's when my leg's going to give out. So once I got that nice base, I'm like, okay, Bobby.
We're going. Yeah, which is why you were essentially in position when you picked him up, and then all you had to do was tip him, kind of thing.
Yeah, all I had to do was just go, and away you go.
Yeah,
and
goodbye.
And he went, and it went exactly the way we could have hoped. But yeah, I had to basically just stay planted and just thank God I go to the gym and I could just flip him.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, There you go. You're, but also like the fact that he didn't sandbag me, the fact that, you know, like it would have really not done him any favors had he like not worked with me.
Sure.
There.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And been scared or, you know, like,
yeah.
Panicked.
He trusted
moment.
You when he moved with it, yes. And made it work. Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to do my part in this because I trust you. So that made it so much easier for me to just mm-hmm. flip him off and complete that without any extra stress of like, oh my God, this guy's not getting up. This mm-hmm. like, how am I?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to recklessly throw you yeah. when I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Which proves, well, I mean, that's how wrestling works, but B, it also proves like how much of a vet he is, because even though you were injured, like you said, your reputation preceded you. He knew A, I've got to trust him, and B, I now need to do my part in this, otherwise yep. things go wrong. And that is one of the most important things in wrestling, but also in death matches. Like, if you half step in death matches, that's when people get fucking hurt. You know what I mean? You need to commit, because if you try and half pull off, then things go wrong. You don't land how you're supposed to. Things are not where they're supposed to be, and then that's when.
Yes, every time. Yeah, or like the guy that you're trusting to give you mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not going to give anybody something that I don't feel like I 1,000,000% can
deliver.
Put them down safely.
Yeah, sure.
But I always tell them, I'm like, if you trust me, mm-hmm. I can put you down safely. I'm like, I just need you to trust me.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't trust me, mm-hmm. then I could lose you this way. I could, mm-hmm. you know, these are things that go wrong if yeah. you don't trust me.
And if you don't, and if you're not comfortable, then we shouldn't even attempt this. Like, yes, that, correct. We'll do something else. Yeah, absolutely.
We've got other options.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You've got to be 100% on the same page. But yeah, it's still, I think, a very impressive performance when you run through all three matches and the journey you went on that day. And then I guess like it kind of the injury overshadowed a little bit, but it is like it's your third win of that tournament, which is really cool. Not many people get to ever win a deathmatch tournament, let alone multiples. Right. And then like you said, in those moments you were quite eloquent after the match. I thought when you literally said, and this is what everybody picked up on, you didn't say it was over. I think your exact words were like, if this is the end, I'm glad it's here with all of you. You know what I mean? It's here and it's now, and I'd be comfortable with that. It's essentially what you say, you know, paraphrasing it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then everybody was like, ah! But you were like, let's be realistic. If this is fucked for like in a really bad way, let's call it kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah, yep. Yeah. And I mean, those fans, but I also say it too. I'm like, that they are the reason it's so damn hard to retire mm. is because, you know, they're always so behind me and they're so supportive, and they've always been. Mm-hmm. You know, afterwards, I was standing there for another 30, 35 minutes after the show, mm-hmm. taking pictures with, you know, a whole lot of fans, like just to myself, because yeah. They all wanted photos. They all know the drill. I always go back to the back beforehand. Mm-hmm. And then about 5 to 10 minutes later, they have to start calling for me. And then I'll hobble out.
It's like a band. You want the encore. You want the
And I'm just like, hey, thanks, guys. But I'm not the most social person.
Yeah.
But then they're like, hey, get your ass out here. We all want to take pictures. And then I'm out there and people are crying. People are thanking me. And I'm like, man, this is...
It's really special. I mean, those now, fans have seen you grow up. I mean, you had said to me back in the original episode, like that place, like ICW Milwaukee, was really where you kind of started getting steam, right? Like
1,000,000%. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same fans. It's the same faces that were there
sure.
when I had my first death match there against Marcus Crane.
Yeah.
Are the same faces and the same fans that are still going today.
Yeah.
You know, like that company and those fans are the absolute best. And I was like, yeah, this is why it's so hard to walk away, is because this is so like, this is a family.
Yeah.
You know, I know them. I know their names. I know That's who right. they are. You know, mm-hmm. I've spent time getting to know them because I've, you know, saw them every Sunday afternoon for, you know, 3 years straight.
Sure. Yeah, that's so awesome. I can't remember if we touched on your first deathmatch with Marcus back in the earlier one. So let's quickly touch on it real quick, because obviously, unfortunately, Marcus has passed now. RIP. I don't know if that had happened before we even spoke the first time, but talk about like somebody really special to have that first match with. Can we rewind a little bit and just talk about what it was like to do that first match and to be with somebody like him?
That was crazy in the fact that I'd done tax. I had done, you know, stuff. I'd done a little bit of deathmatch, but I hadn't really gone full bore in with light tubes. I hadn't really gotten a chance to like dig my teeth in and give it a real go.
Yeah.
And Marcus was a guy that was so giving and was so like, how can I make my, like the person I'm wrestling look great? Like, how can I make that guy look like $1 million? Mm-hmm. How can I give to them when like he could just take?
Absolutely.
But he was like, hey, we're going to do these things. Like, what cool shit can you do to me? What, like, hey, trust me here. This is going to be great. Like, and the big thing was, he's like, hey, it's going to suck, but if your back bleeds like crazy and we get an awesome shot of it, like that's going to be great for you.
Yeah.
Cause that's
a great,
he knew me.
Great piece of advice, right? Like, especially like as a deathmatch wrestler, a resume, like there's no better resume than that one really fucking brutal, sick photo, full back kind of thing. And I have noticed lately, I don't know, maybe I haven't been watching as much, but like just looking at this tournament, even like in the matches that you had, there was no real like, this is the end of like a tournament, like gushing sort of look. And that piece of advice, like, this is your first one, but if you really want to do this, we can make it so you get more bookings. Like, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I told everybody that like has done one with me for the first time or anything. I'm like, hey, this was the best thing that happened to me, because we did that match. It, let me tell you, the healing from those types of matches suck.
Yeah, sure.
But like that's one where, you know, the juice is worth the squeeze there.
Yeah.
When that's all said and done and that photo makes the rounds and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh shit, look, he's got wife beater back and he's got, you know, like the classics, the way it always used to be. Mm-hmm. And that does just so much for you. Now companies go, oh shit, this guy's willing to do some shit. I'll book him.
Yeah.
And then you can start to get places. And that's what happened to me. Like, he posted that photo on a deathmatch group and then it got hundreds and hundreds of comments and shares and it blew up. Mm. And
who posted it? Did Marcus post it for you?
Yeah.
Wow. Which, I mean, yep. He's already a guy that's got like a following and stuff like that. So for him as well to, you know, he's invested in you, you guys have had this match. And then for him to be the one that goes, hey, everybody check out this guy, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that really helped as well.
Which is why I have always had the mindset that I've had of like, sure. I've had so many people give to me mm-hmm. and help me and do so much for me along the way that it would be selfish of me to not do that for other people and mm-hmm. to not do that for whether it's death matches, normal wrestling, you know, all this stuff. Like we have some kids out here at Rocky Mountain Pro that I'm like, hey, you could do some stuff in wrestling. Like mm-hmm. you have some real abilities. Like, let me help you. Let me get you into companies. Let me get you out of Colorado and out into different scenes. Like, let me help mm-hmm. because other people help me.
Yeah.
And like, once I get you out there, it's on you to succeed, mm-hmm. but I can help open that door and help you. Like, I can put my name on you to get you a start.
Yeah.
And let you show your stuff. Because if you don't have that, if you don't have a guy that, you know, has a name or can put a stamp of approval on someone, mm-hmm. then it's tough to make a name for yourself. And like having a guy like Marcus put his stamp of approval on me instantly made me legitimized in death matches.
Yeah.
Because they go, well, if Marcus says he's good, then fuck, he's good by me.
And that was kind of how you sort of appeared even on my radar and things like that. Like, you suddenly were just another guy. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, here's this young rookie. It was like, have you guys seen Iron Fight? Like, it just seemed like you were instantly on that same level.
Which, I mean, was partly because of Marcus doing all that. And the other part was just like, hey, I want to do this and I want to be in this. So I'm not going to half do this.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it takes, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that instantly got me, you know, all the guys were like, oh, this kid gets it.
Yeah.
He's one of us. He's like somebody that just like, oh, maybe I want to do these. Maybe I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I was instantly kind of ingratiated and I didn't take that lightly. I tried not to take it for granted. And I tried not to be like, oh yeah, that's just the way it is. But, you know, I appreciated every chance I got.
Absolutely.
Opportunity.
And went full ball, really, like kind of fearless in a lot of ways and a lot of the steps that you went through. And then when you fast forward through your career and you look at like the stuff, you know, like with Jimmy Lloyd, we told the story in the earlier episodes, but, you know, going to the hospital and almost bleeding out and then, you know, Japan and the Takeda knife board and stuff. Those have been some pretty infamous sort of things that have happened because you weren't really half stepping with anything.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I mean, I've done that with everything in life, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Why have one cat when you can have five cats? You know, why, like,
thought we agreed we were saying that you only had one cat and you just never see them in the same place all at once.
Yeah. But that I've always been that way is,
yeah.
If you're going to do something, you got to do it. And mm-hmm. I don't know if part of that was from getting sober and the whole like mm-hmm. half measures avail us nothing mindset of mm-hmm. like, if you're going to do something, you got to do it 100%. And you got to give it mm-hmm. everything. Cause if you don't, you're not really giving yourself a real chance and you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Yeah. How long, remind me, how long did you feel like you were sort of, or were you like off the rails that you felt, you know what I mean? Before you went and like tackled being sober and stuff like that, was like, do you feel like there was like a significant sort of portion of time where that you wasted, I guess, is that the word I'd use?
No,
I don't know. Yeah.
I think it was just most of my early life. And I think mm-hmm. Thankfully I got sober at an early age mm-hmm. and same thing as with everything. When I did it 100% and yeah. I found a way to ruin my life as fast as possible.
Jesus Christ.
And then, you know, spend that entire year in treatment. So I lost, you know, I'd say I lost a good 3 years of my life to, you know, being an addict and then fixing my addiction mm-hmm. initially.
Yeah.
You know, it's an everyday thing from there, but mm-hmm. that was a good 3 years of my life.
Yep.
And that was one that once I put all that work into fixing it mm-hmm. and I decided, okay, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to change. I'm going to like, this all needs to get better.
Mm-hmm.
It was that all in approach. It was
100%.
I'm going to stay in treatment until I feel like I can handle the outside world.
Sure.
I feel like I can go back into normal society and handle it and, you know, not go right back to
fall off. Yeah.
Not go right back into failing.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Thankfully it worked. And again, I had, you know, a good support system, AA existed and, mm-hmm. you know, everything was so good, but it was something that once I did it, I was like, okay, I can't fuck this up.
Of course. How long sober now?
13. 13
wow.
years.
13 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Dude. Well, congratulations. Yeah.
That was, I celebrated that anniversary right before the Insaneate.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool, man. It's really cool that you can, like, just look at that, like you said, a day-by-day, you know, victory every single day.
It is. It's the one positive thing you can do every day mm-hmm. when you live a life like I did, where you go, okay, you know what? Life maybe doesn't suck that bad. Maybe, you know, maybe you're doing something right.
Yeah. And I mean, you said yourself, like, 3 years sort of wasted. You're like, I know there's worse places I can be. Like,
oh, yeah.
I've been there.
Oh, yeah. Much, Much worse, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's so good, man. So let's do a bit of a speed run since we haven't spoken in a couple of years. Where and what are you doing now, like as far as wrestling? So when we last spoke, you were doing Rocky Mountain, you were coaching, you were doing commentary, you were wrestling there and then picking up other stuff. Has that still been pretty consistent for you? That's been your main focus the entire time?
Yeah, I got burnt out really hard. They brought in a guy and he kind of hated me. And it
unfortunate.
It was a sense of like, I'm the shit, and he just thought that I just wasn't worth anything because I did death matches.
Oh, okay.
And I was to the point where I was like, you know what? I think I want some time to myself, and I want to kind of live my life, yeah, and you know, just kind of reset. And so I did, and I took a little bit of time to reset, but then came back to the school, you know, within the last 6 months, and have gone back to wrestling there, mm-hmm, and training and teaching. And that has been the most rewarding thing, is going back, because it's a whole new set of students. It's a whole new, and they're all so motivated, and seeing people have those aha moments again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to that, it's making me love wrestling a little bit more, because everything I've done kind of over the last few years has just been bookings that I really want to take, mm-hmm, matches I really want to have, mm-hmm, you know, I've kind of just coasted because I don't feel the need to grind. I don't feel the need to chase, you know, being the guy anymore. Mm-hmm. I just don't have that in me. Mm-hmm. So if it's a cool program, a company wants me to run, or they want me to do like, hey, we have this awesome match idea, or like, I've done a lot of stuff with Circle Six. Mm-hmm. That's kind of been the main place I've been. And, you know, the sporadic stuff with ICW No Holds Barred, you know, they're coming back. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if, you know, some stuff doesn't happen there, because Danny and I have always had a good relationship. Yeah. It's kind of, he's kind of understood, like, hey, he doesn't want to wrestle all the time. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't like, if there's a town or a city I want to go to, I'll hit him up and be like, hey, dude,
I'm available if you're doing this. Yeah, sure.
I would like to be there. Uh-huh. So if there's a spot, let me know. I'd love to do it. Mm-hmm. But and that's kind of nice that I get to reach out when I see announcements for places that I can go, hey, mm-hmm, I'd love to do that show. And they go, hey, sounds great.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I orchestrated getting GCW to come in to Colorado here.
Yeah.
We did that a few months ago, and we're doing that again next month. Like, mm-hmm, that's been great for the students here. It's been great for the scene here in general, mm-hmm, just to like have something big come in, mm-hmm, and kind of like show like, hey, this is what the crowds can be like. And
sure.
And it motivates the kids, and it allows us to kind of showcase our local talent.
Yeah.
That doesn't really get showcased. And that was super cool to see. You know, them kind of get a chance on the show and get a little bit of spotlight. Mm-hmm. And I got to do a death match in Colorado finally, so that was nice.
Who were you with in that one?
It's Nick Gage.
Oh, okay. Then, well, that's amazing.
And I hadn't been in GCW in 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because we just haven't really worked together.
Yeah.
And once,
had you wrestled Nick before? Me,
yeah. For ICW Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And
sure.
I'd wrestled him in like multi-mans in GCW and stuff.
Yeah.
We had never done a singles in GCW.
Yeah.
We did it proper. We tore off the nice canvas and had just the old shitty canvas and did good old, like, a lot of people just called it good old fashioned ultraviolence.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go back and check that one. I'm a big Nick Gage fan. And I think it speaks
a classic fight.
Yeah. I think it speaks to the work you've done, man, that like that you sort of just have all these open doors everywhere, and it's great that you can just open them whenever you like, and I love that you're able to use them to like benefit the scene that you're a part of, you know, and help the students that you're investing in and things like that. I think that's really cool, and I think depending on, no matter what happens with your surgery and different things, if that's sort of like the legacy that you're able to leave and just to call on when it suits you and stuff like that, I think that's pretty fucking cool, and it's more than most ever get out of wrestling. You know what I mean?
I mean, because those spots are super cool. Like, you know, if I don't wrestle for 2 years and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, we've got this young guy that we really want, we really think would have an awesome match with you. Like, can you come in and have this match? You know, the doors are always open. Or I have somebody that I'm like, hey, you know, Danny or Dysfunction or Brett, like, is there somebody, like, I've got a kid here. He's really, really talented. I think he'd be a great addition to the show. Will you give him a shot? And they go, sure. Yeah. If you're vouching for him, great. And I'm like, that's
awesome.
It's just such an easy thing to give back and be like, hey, this is, I can help. I can still contribute to the wrestling community and wrestling overall and give back. And I mean, I guess the only other really, the significant thing that I've done in the last little bit is I've done a few things on Barstool Sports.
What's going on there? That's good. Really big. What's the
guy? Yeah. That's I've done the Yak a handful of times, and I've done the show Mostly Sports a handful of times.
Okay.
One of the guys, Brandon Walker, that does Mostly Sports also has a podcast called Wrasslin'.
Okay.
And it got canceled for a while, and then he's just now bringing it back. But we ended up kind of coming across each other on Twitter, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm a wrestler. Like, I was wearing, you know, Barstool merch and wearing Mostly Sports stuff, and kind of got on their radar, and they're like, hey, if you're ever in Chicago, swing by the studio. And got to go on, you know, these massive shows that are watched by hundreds of thousands of people every day, you know, daily shows.
Sure.
And got to go in there, like, their awesome, like, Fantasy Factory HQ in Chicago.
Oh my God, that's sick.
And like, it's super cool to like have done enough in my career to get to go do that kind of stuff. Like, I was sitting in the same chair that, you know, like, NFL quarterbacks sit in.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, like, MLB players, like, I got to do the same stuff that they get to do.
Like, yeah.
That's super cool to, you know, have done enough to get, you know, a little bit of recognition and kind of get to do some of these really cool side quest stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where, like, I could spend a day chopping it up and talking about random, you know, life events. And we did one episode of the Yak where we just broke light tubes, and
they turned into
it was a blast. And they were like, they had no idea what to expect. And they're just like, hey, you want to break stuff today? It's like, well, yeah, let's break stuff. And so
is it like a video medium or is it like an audio medium?
Yeah. Yeah. It's both. They released it on audio, but it's a lot of like, we apologize to the audio listeners. This is not the right time to listen to this, but like that was one where, you know, and then all the clips get shared out and it's a super massive media machine that you're just hanging out at. It's like going to ESPN or Fox Sports.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and like, oh, hey, we just got deathmatch wrestler Orin Viden today.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's a normal thing.
That's cool because it's probably, you know, it'd definitely be a bit of a novelty for them. And then you're obviously a well-spoken, likable person. So that also helps as well. They're like, oh, look, he's not some, you know, like fucking drooling monster. Like he's like a fucking, you know, handsome, nicely spoken man. And then any of our listeners that Google the name Orin Viten, which is only one of them, really, you know, you look at image search and it's just you doing all this gnarly stuff. So there's this kind of like cool infamy. It's like, what's his resume? Google him. And it's like, oh, fuck, okay, this guy's like, it's legit as it gets,
and
you know?
They put up like the Instagram or something and people are like, oh my God, this guy's a psycho.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But then he's like smiling away and he's talking about his five cats and they're like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? Like, it's, you know, it makes you quite an interesting person, I imagine.
One clip in specific where I was in town for a show and I'm sitting there and we're in the Mostly Sports studio and we're talking and I had already gone on a rant about like how important it is to have a high thread count of your bed sheets and how like people take that for granted. And then, there's this movie called The Lake House. It had Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves way back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had just rewatched it. I'd watched it, and it's just a romance movie. And I went on like a minute and a half spiel about how great this movie is. And I was just going off about it. I'm like, it's a wonderful movie. And like, you think this is going to happen, and then they switch it up on you like this, and it really makes you feel something. And
crying on Bob.
and they're laughing about it. They're like, I'm picturing you right now. You're talking about the lake house and about the importance of high thread count sheets. And in about, I don't know, 12 hours, you're going to be rolling around in glass, bleeding from every possible inch of your body. Like these two things just don't go together.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, well, you got to.
Like, well, yeah.
It's because I do all that bleeding that I need the high thread count on the sheets.
Yes. Yeah. That's why it's so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I need that.
Well, don't think about
that soft thing. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think it's great because, like I was saying, that stereotype of like what a deathmatch wrestler is or whatever is one thing, and I don't think you fit into that box. I don't think you've ever fit into it, but I think that it then makes you very interesting, especially for anybody looking outside of it, like just capturing a glimpse, going like, "What is this guy? Like, who is this person?"
They're like, none of this makes any sense, in any way, shape, or form. And I always give people the disclaimer of like, listen, there's good death matches, and there's bad death matches. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff when you look up death matches is the bad death matches, because that's the stuff that seems to get some sort of traction and, you know, makes those clips make the rounds.
Yeah. And for a long time when it was first going, with, you know, a few very notable exceptions, but like there was a big era there where that's all it was, you know, there just wasn't that, and you know, the stigma of it, and the better wrestlers didn't want to do it, and things like that. But now we're really at a stage where some amazing wrestlers do death matches, you know, and
right. And that's the kind of the other mark I want to have, is that like I was part of that crop of like really good hybrid guys.
Yeah.
Like the guys that could do it all, that you wanted to see wrestle normal matches, that you couldn't tell the difference other than the fact that there was glass and blood. Like other than that, it was normal wrestling, that you could show a normal wrestling fan death matches and they go, oh yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's not just like, oh, they're just swinging shit and it, like, what is this? Is tough to watch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're uncoordinated and falling out of the ring and all this kind of bad stuff. Yeah. It's like, yo, this is crazy what I've just seen this man do. Like, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, they're still high flying to it. There's storytelling. There's everything still exists. It's just, hey, glass is involved. That's it's the only difference, is just a little bit more fun and excitement.
Absolutely. The water's a little bit deeper is how I like to describe it. So since we've spoke, I mean, we both you were doing commentary back when we first spoke. Since we have last spoken, I have started doing commentary. So we started, I say we as in I'm part of the team. Somebody started a no-ring deathmatch show here in Perth, and I became involved with it very early on. Called Dude, Where's My Ring? We were chatting about it, and I've talked about it on the show. But in that, I kind of put myself forward. I'm like, do you have anybody for commentary? And they're like, no, I haven't really thought about it. I'm like, do you want me to just handle that? And they're like, yeah. And then I'm like, fuck, I got to let her do commentary now. Yeah. But like,
oh shit,
fucking book myself, right? and I've been doing that for over a year now, and I got to say, I love it, man. Like, it's so fun, especially in a deathmatch context as well, because it's like, it's literally me and a friend. I pulled in a friend of mine, Adam, Dean Olsen, who has been a commentator around Perth for like over 16 years. I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'll get a pro in
right.
me, right? But I've known him for like over 10 years. Like, we are, so we're just like drinking beer on the side of this fight pit, like just talking shit, like while it's going on. And it's literally like one of the funnest things I get to do.
Yes.
It really is like a special thing, and regardless of what happens with your knee, is that something that you're really wanting to keep moving forward with?
Yeah, I think that would be, I mean, that's what I've been told my career is in anyway. So I don't know why I've wasted so much time not just doing
When you said it was what you originally wanted to start doing, you just took a brief side quest into becoming like a deathmatch icon for a time. But, I mean, you could even see, like, with your history and stuff, like, when you think about commentators and color commentators, it doesn't hurt if you've got a background in wrestling,
no,
you know, and especially one like yours, like that. You could even see, like, a WWE or an NXT or something being like, let's get in the guy that was in death matches, like, you know, and talking about it, and like that plays into it.
Because it offers something like when we had, you know, the guys from TNA out here at Rocky Mountain Pro all the time, they would tell me like, oh, you're good at commentary. You break it down, like you break down the science of why somebody's trying to do something and what they're going for and why that helps do this. And like you break it down in like a sports way and really like put that behind the scenes idea into like, oh, this is why this is happening. Not like, look at this cool move.
Yeah.
And they said that is such a valuable asset and it's something that you can really use. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just fun, especially when you're friends with the guys that are out there doing the stuff and you get to help them look better and help contribute to their story. Like, how many times has Struggles or Ron or, you know, Kevin Gill or guys like that, like, really contributed to moments?
Absolutely.
Really given that extra oomph to that moment where, like, the end of that Tommy Vendetta match that I had where, you know, Struggles is losing his mind. Mm-hmm. He's like, take him there, kid.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, it's so such good. A great call.
Yeah.
And it adds to those moments, like, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to give that to other people and really add to wrestling that way.
Sure.
Or like reffing and doing other stuff like that, like having the ability, because I still ref out here when we're shorthanded and because I have a blast reffing the first three matches and then, okay, now you're going to wrestle the main.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm like, fuck it. Yeah, I'll do it all.
The ref goes away and comes out as the fucking champ.
Yeah, so they're like, wait, that's not the same guy. And just never giving it any note and just playing it off like that. That didn't just
That's happen. A different guy. That's my twin brother.
Yeah, totally different. Yeah. Same tattoos, same arm sleeves, same everything.
Twins. Exactly.
Guy. Yeah. But like giving wrestlers, like especially young wrestlers, like peace of mind when you're in there as their ref and, you know, like kind of making them calm down and helping them not be so stressed.
Being able to be in their ear. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And be like, hey, you got this. Like, that was great. Like, you're doing good. Keep going. Like, hey, fire up, do all these things. Like coach from a referee.
That's great. Yeah.
Is super fun. And it's valuable. Super rewarding. And then that helps them kind of relax because there's so many times, because I remember that I was the same way. It's so stressful.
Yeah, sure.
And, or, you know, guys that have been doing it for a while and don't need that, like making them laugh or popping the boys while you're out there and, you know, just seeing what you can get out of them while you're the ref. And they're like,
trying not to break.
Yeah. And but have people be like, oh, I love when he's my ref because he's talking shit the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm fucking with people the whole time I'm out there. And it's just, it's fun. Yeah. And that makes wrestling fun again.
That's great. Yeah. That's really
what
cool.
Should be.
Yeah, exactly. And it I think it's so great that you've just like got this positive sort of outlook on wrestling now, because I know it wasn't always that way. And regardless of, you know, how things go, you're at peace with it because there's plenty of opportunities regardless. You know what I mean? It's not all in ring.
Right. And I think that's what I hope more people take that away and kind of realize, like, hey, like there's other stuff to do after wrestling. Like, when Danny Havoc retired from being an in-ring wrestler, he was one of the best commentators. Like some of that early GCW stuff where he's doing commentary, he is incredible at commentary. He's so good because he's so smart. Like there's so many other facets of this industry that are just as rewarding as trying to be the main event guy and being the, you know, the champion of the promotion. Like, that, don't get me wrong, that rules.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
You're like, I've done that. It's great.
it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the other stuff is also super fun, and mm-hmm. it's super cool to just stay with it because we all loved it as kids. Mm-hmm. You know, we all grew up loving it and, you know, found a way to love it. And if you get to stick around and, you know, still be a part of it, mm-hmm. even if your in-ring career is done, why not?
Yeah.
Like, look at JBL. JBL did that forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Afterwards. Yeah. Kaz, like, all those guys that just...
JBL just came back to GCW and fucking clothesline from Hell Effie or some shit. That's so funny.
What a markout moment for me.
Yeah.
Because that was who I watched growing up.
Yeah, sure.
Man, that makes me wish I was still wrestling.
You're like, good. I'm going to have to put some effort into GCW and get back in.
Yeah, I was like, shit, I want to take the clothesline from Hell. That's...
be sick.
It's not asking that much.
No. That's nuts. I agree, man. I really enjoyed my time with commentary, just like interacting with everybody, helping, hopefully making people look cool, you know, telling stories, talking about their struggle. All those things are really fun. And then like little interactions, because we're in like, you know, such a small kind of enclosed space. We just do it on like a brewery floor kind of thing. You know, I'm talking shit with the guys as they come, or I'm
in while ring. It's happening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or like they flip me off as they're leaving and stuff like that. I'm like I can be biased because I can do whatever I want on commentary. Like dude comes in, I'm like, look at this fucking prick, like just on commentary, like ripping on him.
Yes.
And then if I'm ever in the pit, there's been a couple of times like I filled in as ring announcer for the first time and I'm like, never done this before. So I'm just talking shit with people, bit of banter. I just was like, well, I don't have like a great, you know, traditional announcer's voice. So I just approached it like I was singing for a hardcore band. Shout out Righteous Jesse. I was like, I'm just going to kind of approach it a bit like him and do my own thing. And then, you know, I was trying to be organized and I was going, can everybody, you know, in the group chat, can everybody just let me know your stats and things like that? And, you know, for the announcer thing, they're all like, no. I was like, great, okay. And so on the day they all wrote notes and there was skits that came out of that and just bullshit because they're all fucking, you know, ribbing me. Like there was one match where, no joke, the intro that I had to do for the two guys and how everything played out was longer than the actual match they had. Like there was
the same thing happened to you because when I had to do ring announcing one night, one guy gave me his stuff and I'm like, listen, I'm Ron Burgundy. I will read whatever you put on this card.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever you tell me, and I'm sitting there reading off his nicknames and I'm like, God damn, this is,
I gotta send you this link. It's so funny. Like I've got the notes, but then those are the wrong notes. And then he's like, oh, check your phone. I text it to you. And then I'm reading a text like word for word and he's like reacting to it. And the other guy's getting mad and like all this bullshit's going on. It was so funny. It was so funny. Like the crowd were like pissing themselves. Like we had so much fun with it. And then, the other day the show opened, the scenario for it, you would have seen it on social media. We were talking about it, but like, so the scenario is this, we weren't able to run for a few months. Somebody, we probably know who it is, but somebody that works for another wrestling company probably, essentially kind of like complained to a government body here in WA called WorkSafe that we maybe weren't doing safe practices. So it had to sort of get shut down while they sort of investigated it and we showed that we did all the right things and all this stuff. And so it's back now, but we have a wrestler named Mr. Thompson. He kind of doesn't really wrestle for us, but he is a wrestler. And he's like a principal or like a sports teacher type thing. And he usually comes and he'll like get put through a table or something he's carrying on. And so the whole scenario now is that it was probably him that had ratted everybody out. And now we've got guardrails and he's like shining them up and he's talking about like how great it is and stuff like that. And soon we'll have a ring and it's all going to be good because he's like involved. It's like the running thing, right? But he had a clause in his thing. He's like, I've got a clause in my contract. Now nobody can put me through my desk. It's not a table. It's always a desk because it's a piece of stationery. He's like, nobody can put me through my desk, blah, blah, blah. And then Adam and I are there because we're the commentators and we're like, we're not wrestlers. We fucking chokeslammed him through the desk. The first time I've ever done like a – I've actually taken a low blow before in a quiz one time. But the first time I've ever done a wrestling move, and it was literally like the funnest shit ever because he looked like he was fucking taking the clothesline from hell from Kane or something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
It was literally like the funnest thing. And like just having those little opportunities to sort of be involved and be included and things like that. It's just so fun.
Yeah. And that like, that's the stuff that you like get to laugh about like down the road.
Yeah.
I went and stayed. There was a guy that was a manager out here and he kind of had the same gimmick. He's like a high school coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because sure. He was Coach Mac. Yeah. And so we did this whole thing and he moved back to the Chicagoland area. Mm-hmm. And I went out and stayed with him while I was back there. And all the stuff that we talked about had nothing like some of it was like wrestling matches that happened, mm-hmm. but most of it was just like all the fun shit that we did, you know, before the shows or after the shows, mm-hmm. or, you know, like messing with each other during, or, mm-hmm. you know, just all that fun stuff. And I was like, man, that's all the point. Fun stuff that happens.
Yeah, that's it. Great. I actually did a podcast with Mr. Thompson a couple ago. I'll send you the link for it. But that entire thing, he's in character like the entire time, like as the principal. Like it's one of the funnest because we're just ad-libbing bullshit. And it was literally yes. like, so because I'm picking at him like the whole time kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, where did you when did you start training for wrestling? I know you were like really successful in other sports. It's like, yeah, you know, Mr. Thompson was successful in everything he's tried or whatever. And he's like, but, you know, he got injured a few too many times and maybe his weight wasn't where he wanted it to be. So he decided to start training in wrestling. I'm like, so when you were overweight and injured, how did you, like, well, no, when I called him injury prone and overweight. He's like, I don't think that's what I said. Like just finding little ways to make him fucking flare up every time. It's
yes.
just so fun to do that kind of improv part of wrestling.
Yeah. And that like, there's so many people that are scared to jump into that part mm-hmm. and like, just have fun with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like just let whatever works work.
Yeah.
And then you get to do that shit. You're like, okay, that was so much fun.
Yeah. And lean into it and listen to the crowd and see what's kind of biting and sort of go from there.
Yes. Man,
that's awesome. Well, I reckon it wouldn't be a Rafe and Oren conversation if we didn't at least touch on like the general sort of media and hobbies and yep. stuff we're consuming at the moment. We've talked about plenty of wrestling, like we've been known to kind of go off. So what are you digging at the moment? Are you playing any games? What are you reading? Watching movies? What's keeping you active at the moment?
I'm still hard on Genshin Impact. And then they have another game out now that has also gotten me. So I'm trapped in a vicious cycle. And I've been trying to watch new animes lately. Mm-hmm. I just started The Promised Neverland. That one is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
One that I would recommend to anybody mm-hmm. is Erased.
Okay.
If you haven't seen Erased, it is like, it's either 12 or 14 episodes.
Okay.
It's not long. But every episode, you will be sitting there going, what the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah,
what am I watching? Because you don't know what's happening next. And that has been...
Is like, it this one with the covers like a yes, two kids and a fire punch? Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. Very, very worth it. Very, like, it is an absolute mind blower.
Yes.
And I did actually start reading. Mm-hmm. I read so much as a kid and then I just didn't read as an adult. And then I watched the show called The Three Body Problem.
Okay.
It was on Netflix and they did it. A coworker told me about it mm-hmm. and he's not one that usually jumps in our morning, you know, bullshitting. Mm-hmm. So when he gave me the recommendation, I figured, okay, this must be a good recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hopped on and watched it and come to find out Netflix hadn't picked up like the other it's a series of like three books.
Yeah.
And
right.
It was only the first book. And so I was like, well, this was so good.
Mm-hmm. Now I got to
so
read them
all. Yeah. So I bought all the books, and so I've been reading.
What's the premise of this?
It's that like, it's so hard to give it away without basically like aliens are trying to stop us from using our science, uh-huh. and they're basically going to come take all of our resources because they can't live anymore.
Okay.
But like we,
so it's sci-fi or
it, but definitely sci-fi.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Definitely sci-fi, but it's so hard to explain, but it is a great roller coaster.
Yeah, sure.
Of just, oh my God, I can't believe what is happening at each turn.
Yeah.
And I've been hooked on that. I've also been big into just watching sad stuff. You know? a little bit of This Is Us, you know?
I just love house. Sad stuff.
Yeah, you know, just watch.
Feeling
watch
your feelings.
Yeah, you just gotta feel it all, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I haven't watched this movie in a long time, but if we're going to talk about sad stuff, what do you think the movie that made you cry the most in your life is?
I honestly, it might be The Wind Rises.
The Wind Rises. Who's in that?
Studio Ghibli.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That got me good.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know if movies have gotten me as good as like the end of TV shows.
Yeah, okay.
Did you ever see Doom Patrol?
No, because I think I saw some episodes, but it's not really streaming anywhere here in Australia. I don't.
Of course
don't
not.
Think. So I know what Doom Patrol is. I'm a comic book guy and I've read issues and stuff like that, but no, I haven't seen the whole thing. Emotional?
When that ended, I think I cried for a solid 25 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
And I knew it was ending. I knew it was over. But the way that they ended it in the final scene.
Oh, fuck,
I
it is. Like, I can get it. I'm going to. You can't. I'm queuing it up. It's the, now. The it series, didn't used to be, I don't think.
The series is worth watching. If you've read it, you know how wild and
yeah,
weird
it's crazy.
It gets.
Yeah.
And they do such a good job with it.
Yeah.
And like at the end, I literally like when the final scene ends, I felt like I got shot with a shotgun of emotions.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't handle this.
Yeah.
Because they do such a good job of making you care about all the characters.
That's great.
That's one that I recommend to anybody.
It's, yeah. I'm going to check that out. I need another one because I have like, you know, us shows, me and my wife shows, and then I have my shows. I have Rafe shows that I just know she just will not be interested in. And so I'll add that to my show kind of list. And it's a good four seasons, which I'll get into. I reckon the most I've ever cried, and it's probably like a pretty standard answer, but the amount of crying was ridiculous, was in The Notebook. At the end of that, like the level of like full body racking sobs I went through, it's the most I've ever cried from anything ever, I reckon. Like that movie fucked me up. I will never watch it again. Like I can't go through it again. Like it's, it just was crazy.
Honestly, like my tests to see like if a potential partner is going to be somebody that I'm going to be able to vibe with.
Yeah.
I'll either show them From Up on Poppy Hill, mm-hmm. The Wind Rises, or, Whisper of the Heart from Studio Ghibli.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't cry at the end of either one of those three, or they're not feeling some sort of emotion,
you're like, this is a fucking robot.
Back tears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's no point.
Yeah. We can never.
Like if this isn't making you feel something, what are we doing here?
So what you're saying to me is that any future dates you have, you bring in the potential partner. First date, they come back to Oren's house. they sit with the five cats on the couch and they watch The Notebook. And if there's no emotion out of them, or they're not into the cats, or they're allergic, don't even just see yourself out.
There's no point.
See yourself out.
If you're not going to cry watching sad movies, then what are we doing here? Like, if you want to watch a horror movie or something, one, I can't handle that because I have to sleep with the lights on for the next 6 months because I just watch a scary movie. I can't be alone.
Yeah.
Every creak. And like, don't get me wrong, Whitley's great at guarding the house.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to protect me enough.
I don't think so. I also think cats are the kind of dudes that would peace out. Like, they're going to look after their best interests. They're just going to be gone.
Yeah.
He's
awesome. He guards the door. He does the whole deal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think if push came to shove, he would just be like, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
You know what?
I'm out.
I tried to warn you.
Peace.
Yeah. You got this, right?
He's like that that meme you see of Gyllenhaal where he pieces out and walks through the smoke. You know, that's it. That's it. You know, as the house burns down around you.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to recommend you some like kind of scary books that I've been reading, but I don't think I'll trouble you with them.
Scary books?
Well, yeah. Like because I've been driving a lot for work, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. So I like to kind of keep things going. And there's I was recommended this writer, Grady Hendrix, who does like a lot of fun sort of premises, like elevator pitch sort of books. And they're not too heavy.
Okay.
And they're usually kind of, it's a killer type thing or it's a ghost or something like that. But the first one that was recommended to me was called The Final Girl Support Group. And the scenario is that in slasher movies, Freddy Krueger, you know, Friday the 13th, that there's always like a final girl, right? She's the only person that survives.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so this is set like, you know, a bunch of sort of middle-aged final girls. They were teens when there's an allegory for each of them. There's like the girl that survived, you know, the Crystal Lake massacre. There's a girl that survived Scream. There's like, you know, a cluster of them, maybe five or six, something like that, that all link back to, they don't call them those movies, but it is that, you know, it's the guy in the hockey mask, it's the thing or whatever. And they go to support group and they've all handled it differently. You know, one has been an on and off again addict, kind of the mainest girl's been like a real shut in, you know, she's now her mid 30s or whatever, but like she goes into a house and she's got like a million locks and all these like go bags and safety. Like she's a real shut in and she only goes to the support group and they meet like once a month or whatever. And they talk about everything that's happened. Until they start to die one by one.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, there you go. And so that started it. And I kind of enjoyed that. And, you know, it's not too heavy, you know. And then he's got one called How to Sell a Haunted House, which are a brother and sister who don't even speak and don't get on well. Their parents pass away, you know, suddenly in a car accident. And they need to, like, sell the family house. Except for it's haunted and there's puppets. And you look worried. Puppets? Yeah. And then there's, he's got like a few good ones. There was another one, the Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. And the way he's a Southern gentleman. He was like, I wanted to essentially write a book about my mum, who was like a very proper Southern lady versus Dracula. Like, and he's like, and let's just say one of them had no chance kind of thing. And like, you know, the Dracula, he's not like, wah, 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 you know, I mean, he's a drifter or whatever, but there's this kind of like, is this guy actually a fucking vampire? Is he a killer? That kind of thing. And so they're just like these really fun premises and they're not too long, you know, like in an audio book, they're like anywhere from 8 to 14 hours, whatever, you know,
right,
kind of
so
thing.
Nothing crazy.
Yeah, just knock them out. And they're not, you know, they're not too scary or anything like that, but they've kind of been my go-to while driving around if I'm not like listening to a podcast or like, you know, banging tunes or anything like that.
I did a deep dive back into rereading Sandman.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome. I was just talking about that the other day with Curtis from my other podcast. He loves those books.
They're so good.
Yeah.
Because Netflix did it. They did like a live action of it.
Yes. Yeah. Is it good? I haven't watched it.
I thought it was amazing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
I thought they crushed it. Yeah. Some people I think didn't think that, but I thought like it was everything it could have been. And then some,
yeah.
Like from everything that I remembered. So I was like, okay, I haven't read them in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go back and reread them. and rereading them, like, wow, these are just as good, if not better, than I remember.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna have to get into that because we'll talk about Animal Man.
They're definitely worth like a re-listen, or because I know they do a lot of them in audiobook too.
Oh, really?
Oh, maybe, yeah. I'm just like, that's what I need. Which, I mean, they're such good stories.
Mm.
Which the illustrations in them are definitely add to
part
it,
of it. But yeah, sure.
But the stories in it are alone are worth the re-listen.
Yeah. Speaking of, actually, this ties back into what you said. Speaking of Doom Patrol, have you watched Dead Boy Detectives on Netflix?
No.
So that is, I think they're like cameo characters or small characters in Doom Patrol are the Dead Boy Detectives, but they got their own series on Netflix.
Yes, they are. Okay.
But different actors. Like, it's like a whole series. I'm only a few episodes in, but it's pretty fun.
Okay, that's
just making notes. This is what Aaron and I do. We just like fucking mine each other for info shit we'll like and then not talk for 2 years.
How much do you like Korean game shows?
Oh, I mean, as much as you can like anything.
Oh, dude, because I like Physical 100.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah, I haven't watched the second season, actually.
Yeah, you haven't?
No. It was kind of like on the docket, and it's just sort of like fallen to the bottom of the pile.
It's so good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to check it out.
And those motivate me so much as I'm watching them.
As a fitness guy, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm like, I guess I need to work out like 17 times harder.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they have a bunch more on Netflix and stuff of just other like.
I saw the zombie one. Did you see that? Where it's like they're like in the world, and they're like got to survive like. There's like actors and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't see it all the way through, but it was cool.
There was, I can't remember that. I will have to send it to you afterwards because I won't remember it. But there was a couple that I watched that were awesome.
Yeah.
They're
so elaborate every time.
Yes. Yeah. And every time I'm like, why are we not doing this in America?
Yeah.
Why is all we have Survivor and Big Brother?
Yeah, or like dating shows, and that's it.
Yes. Yes, we need more than washed-up celebrity dating shows or like The Golden Bachelor. We need something better.
Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
These Korean game shows are it.
Yeah, that's it. And when you think about like the success of Squid Game as well, like you think this fucking speaks to itself, you know? And they did do an American Squid Game, didn't they? Like they did like an actual reality show version
Netflix
of it.
Netflix did it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's not as good as the show. Like, yeah.
Right. They're just like, okay, we're just gonna do the competition.
Yeah, yeah. Which is the hard part, right? Because like, and it's why I sort of lost interest when I was watching it, is because it's not a scripted thing and it is a real competition. There'd be kind of like people they're focusing on where you're like, oh, I'm really rooting for this person. And then they just get eliminated. Like, and you're like, oh, there's no underdog story here. He's already gone. You know what I mean? Like, and then they're like, oh, we've got to change tack because fucking our main guy we're focusing on is gone now. And it wasn't even, and he hadn't even done anything. He was sort of like in the background and got eliminated with like 20 other people. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Well, I guess that was cool.
Exactly. This is why rigging things and predetermining things work so well. Thanks, pro wrestling.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Pro wrestling has also made reality shows so much harder to watch.
But well, yeah. Yeah.
I'm able to tell myself that the Korean reality shows and game shows are much. That they just do it legit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I tell myself.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty full on, the Korean ones, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, absolutely. I hope so.
Yeah, and if not, I don't want to know.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, I'm not picking up on it, so then mission accomplished, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, those got me hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for a while, I'm like, okay, I guess this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to get off work and I'm just going to watch, you know, half a season of this new game show.
Of whatever
and
this
tomorrow is. I'll finish it and then I'll find a new one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now they're so good. Are you reading any comic books at all?
I just dug back into my comic book collection because I was cleaning out like the spare room in my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened up my long box of comic books and found all of my stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm
whispering
that
through.
Is the next Pandora's box to open.
I got to tell you, mine has opened a little bit. So it was a bit of a gateway drug thing, but I told you before, I paint miniatures sometimes and I do like a little bit of this. My friend got me to, he's like, hey, do you want to come play in this tournament for this game, Marvel Crisis Protocol? And I'm like, what is it? He's like, oh, it's a miniature game with like superheroes or whatever. You've got like a squad, depending on like the threat of the mission, it can be anywhere from 15 to 20. Characters have got a threat level, and so you'll take a squad of anywhere from like, you know, 3 to 6 people, X-Men, Avengers, whatever, and then all of the characters have individual powers and stuff like that. It's very fluffy and very, you know, like the books kind of thing. I went, oh, yeah, fuck, that'll be a bit of fun. And, dude, fucking hell. I got into it, did all right in the comp and won, in the raffle, won the actual game, like the box. So then I'm like building it and I'm painting it and I'm like right into it. And I'm like, oh, fuck, this is a gateway drug, isn't it? And then I was like reading about what's been going on with X-Men, and then I'm on a free trial on Marvel Unlimited, like reading X-Men, yep, Krakoa and shit. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I cannot get back into this again, like in the level that I did, because, dude, I've got tubs of comics in storage for 8 years now that I've been in this apartment. Like, I cannot reopen Pandora's box. Like,
no, because you know how that goes.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm like a completist. Next thing you know, I've got to fucking exactly. Insane.
I just started doing the whole like building models thing.
Oh, yeah.
And because Digimon have them.
Oh, okay. Have they got a game, or they just do the models?
No, they just do like, it's like model kits. Like, have you seen like the Gundam model kits?
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. Come on. So I've like been that, to Japan nine times. Of course I've seen the Gundam.
Yeah, model. Okay, yeah. Duh. You know exactly what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I'll go back to Japan in 2 weeks, actually.
So you'll see them everywhere.
I will. And so do they do like you get the kit of like, I don't know, a Digimon monster, and you build the whole thing, prime it, paint it.
Yeah, everything's all apart and you just piece it all together, and then.
Which is so fun.
Oh my God. I did not realize how fun that is. And yeah, I have friends that do models or mini painting and you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never even considered it. I was like, that seems like a lot of work.
Oh, it is a lot of work. And then it's very relaxing.
And then I did it. Mm-hmm. It is an absurd amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I like one night sat down and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this one. I'm just gonna do like, you know, the chest part or the first chunk of this.
Do you have to paint them, or do they come colored like the Digimon?
These ones come colored.
Okay.
I'm not of the level of painting yet.
No, I mean, I cheat. Yeah.
I have not taken that on that task.
There's many shortcuts you can take, my friend. Hit me up.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. And I was like, oh, I'll just do a little bit. Yeah. Next thing I know, it's 4.5 hours later, and I'm like, I'm almost done.
Yeah.
I can finish it. I'll get it done. And I did, and I was like, well, this is awesome.
Yeah. Now I'm going to have to do all of these.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to buy, like, one every other paycheck.
Yeah. That's what happened with the Marvel thing, right? I already was kind of doing some stuff, and then I've got it, and I'm like, okay, this is cool. Well, I've got in the box kit 2 teams and all the terrain and shit like that. And then I'm like, but these aren't the teams I want. I'm an X-Men guy. I want the X-Men. So next minute I'm in the group. I'm like, hey, does anybody fucking want to trade any of these? And then I'm swapping the ones that I've got to fucking get X-Men. Then I'm painting those. And then I'm like, and now I've got so much on with between dude coming back, the Discord reunion show, going to Japan, coming up, all the work stuff that's got, like, I just have no fucking time. Like, and I'm like, I guess I'll look at these in December. Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, hopefully.
I'll come back to this, but
yeah,
I never should have opened this box.
Yeah, exactly. But secretly in the back of my head, it's actually the only thing I want to do. So all of the other things feel like a burden because this is the thing I want
to
do. Yeah,
because you're like, I just want to get to this.
I just fucking want to play this fun shit. And so, yeah, it's so fun. But, yeah, I would recommend or not recommend playing that game if you want to be addicted to something.
Hey, I'm as somebody who's been hooked on the same gacha games for the last, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
I will get hooked on it.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, all of these are better addictions than other ones you've had in the past, right?
Yes, so. Exactly. That is my exact mindset.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? This is way better than anything else I could be hooked on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because at least this one I can put it down and be like, you know what? Oh, I can come back to this tomorrow.
Yeah, and nobody's getting hurt. Nobody's getting hurt. Yeah, I'm not getting hurt.
This isn't ruining anybody else's life.
Yeah.
Consuming my free time.
Which I may have too much of.
Yes. Yeah, far too much of.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, I want to wish you, like, all the luck in the world with everything that's coming up with your knee and whatever decision that you make, regardless of what it is, you know, like whether it is continuing with wrestling or it's not, whatever makes you happy is what's most important. But every time I do see your smiling face, you always seem to be living your best life. So I love to see it, man.
I try my best. These talks are always some of my favorite.
No, thank you, man. Mine too.
Get to be two guys catching up across the world for a little while.
It's one of those, I feel like we've got one of those friendships that, like, I know, like I have with my high school best friends where it's like, cool, I won't speak to you for 4 years, but then when we next speak, it's like no time has passed. Like it's that kind of connection, I think. So, yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
We keep track of each other while life is going on and like stuff and everything. But then once it's time to talk, it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's been happening?
Nothing's changed. I just talked to you yesterday, didn't I?
Absolutely. And it's that kind of thing that, like, you know, both know if you ever need anything, like, I'm here for you, man. Like, you can lean on me. I'm always a message away. So, yeah, absolutely.
Which is more than appreciated.
Yeah, I mean it, man. Tell everybody where to find everything Orrin Vight while it still exists before you disappear into the world of retirement or don't.
Everything is still at Orrin Vight. I guess I now have TikTok. I don't know what I'm doing on it.
Yeah.
It's just a platform you're supposed to use as a wrestler. So I don't know.
Well, just put clips up or something?
Use it. Yeah. It's either the gym or just random clips.
Yeah.
Also, every now and again, you can find me on Barstool's The Yak or Barstool's Mostly Sports.
Absolutely. Are those shows like up and streaming? Like people could go find them?
They're YouTube daily shows. So Mostly Sports is on in the morning, Monday through Friday, and The Yak is on in like early afternoon, Monday through Friday.
You should shoot me the links and I'll put them in the show notes. Yeah, absolutely.
I definitely will. And I know that they have Australian fans.
Well, there you go. I mean, Barstool's big. Like they used to have a wrestling show. When you said that wrestling one, I'm like, was that the one I used to listen to? But when I was first getting back into wrestling, they used to have a wrestling podcast and I used to love it. And there was two guys that ran it, and then when I know they had to change locations or something happened, they had to close down, and I was gutted. I was like, "This is like my favorite podcast at the moment." And it was just them, you know, talking about what was happening in WWE or whatever, you know. But I used to really enjoy it. Like,
that was probably exactly what it was.
Yeah, it was probably those guys.
That's what's come back now.
Yeah,
it's just one guy.
Yeah. Okay. And so, what's it called? Wrestling.
Wrestling. Yep.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna have to check it out. And then you've been on that as well?
I haven't done wrestling yet. Everybody keeps saying, hey, maybe he should be on wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
He did just interview Hulk Hogan.
There you go. Well, you guys are basically the same level.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I like to think I'm a little bit better person.
So, I mean, I can guarantee.
I should be a shoo-in. Yeah,
exactly. I think that's a given. Everybody should tweet at Barstool Sports and get Orrin.
Get me on wrestling.
Yeah, get him on wrestling. Orrin Vight for wrestling. Let's get it going. Let's get hashtag.
There we go.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much sway I've got these days.
I can't wait for Brandon to be like, why is there a massive Australian audience reaching out to me about you being on wrestling?
Why is there one podcaster that's done one hashtag ever about me?
Hey. It'll work. It'll work as long as they see it.
I hope that it does work, and I will try and do it. We're going to put that on the show notes as well. So everybody, make sure you check out those notes, find those links, check out everything. Orrin, check out Rocky Mountain as well. We'll need to put the link in for that and what's coming up next. If you can, go check out IWTV, check out ICW Milwaukee's Lust Insane 8. and see the insane journey that Oren went on with his knee as well.
My non-retirement speech.
Absolutely. You never know. It could still be retirement. That's up to you.
Hey, who knows?
It might be relevant. You didn't give a time frame in that speech. It could still.
I didn't.
When you do retire, go, I don't even give a speech. Just leave and never come back and be like, yeah. I already did it years ago.
already covered that. I covered that in 2024, guys.
It's done. Yeah, just see this.
can't give two.
Yeah, yeah. You just hold up like a QR code and it links to the clip of that video and then that's you done.
Listen to this.
I can never be more eloquent than I was then.
Yep. I crushed it once. I'm a one and done guy.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Done. Well, dude, thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to catch up today. It was really fun to just talk shit with you and see you doing so well.
Thank you. This was an absolute blast. Let's not wait until I'm 33 to do this again.
Yeah, no, we definitely won't. We'll try and do at least an annual catch up, I think, is what we got.
Perfect.
Got to tick it off, regardless of whether you're wrestling or not. I think so.
That works for me.
Absolutely. No worries. Well, everybody out there, follow everything Oren Vyte. Check out all those links and everything we've done. And like we always say, it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Countout Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Countout Network and all our sister shows over there at Countout Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G. Raver, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a Deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the violent view.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Hey. Have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Houston. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.